You need to have people around you that you trust, and then you feel a lot more confident having open conversations. And I just truly believe women that stick together and hold each other up is how women have gotten the type of progress that we've seen, and who knows what we can do going forward.
Welcome to Season 5 of the Women on the Move podcast. I'm your host, Sam Saperstein. In this season, we're giving our financial health a checkup with some phenomenal women giving us the prescription for financial wellness. We'll speak to experts on how to educate your children about money, how to address debt, and how to save for home ownership. It's a masterclass on understanding and managing your money. In this episode, I'm joined by Kiasha Burns, Vice President of Public Relations for Chase Home Lending. Kiasha sat down with me to discuss how women can prepare for home ownership and what JPMorgan Chase is doing to enable buyers to secure homes and build their wealth. I hope you enjoy the conversation. So Kiasha, thank you so much for joining us on the Women on the Move podcast. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much.
So let's start with the fact that you are a homeowner and wanted to ask you, what made you feel ready to take that step? How did you prepare financially to make that purchase?
Well, I was far from a traditional path. I worked in financial services and in the housing space for almost 15 years now, and I bought about 5 years ago. So I was pretty deep in the industry, and I was pretty anti-home ownership. It doesn't make any sense, but I was spending my money how I wanted to. I was in my 20s. I was living in Washington, D.C., and my lifestyle was fine for what I wanted. And I was getting a lot of pressure from my family of just saying, it's time, you should do it. And all I could think was, I need to move far outside the city. It's going to cost all of my money. And I don't need that. It wasn't really a priority for me. But actually, it was really more so feeling like I just wouldn't be able to afford it and didn't know if I would qualify. And so I just kind of rejected the idea. But then I was looking to just upgrade my apartment. I just wanted a bigger apartment, looked at the prices, and it was ridiculous. And then I just did a little math and saw that it was possible. And that's when I started just digging for information and came around to it. And next thing I knew, 6 months later, I was signing on a place.
So what have been some of the more important lessons you learned along the way in terms of getting to this purchase that you would want to share with others?
Honestly, when I talk about when I bought my place, the thing that people want to know the most about were like the mistakes. You know, did you have credit card debt? Sometimes we read these articles and we get this advice and it's all packaged beautifully and has a little bow on it as if that's how people live their lives. And it's just not. People have credit card debt. People have student loans. Certainly when you're talking about the millennial generation, the way that we're coming into adulthood was just completely different than our parents as far as debt. A lot of people have a mortgage-sized student loan payment. So for me personally, I was looking at credit card debt. Once I came around to wanting to buy something, I had about $10,000 in credit card debt that I needed to tackle. I also had student loans, but my student loan debt was not outrageous. I was making that payment just fine. So I decided to tackle the credit card debt first. And I ended up sitting down with my grandfather, who took out a piece of graph paper, and he created a little plan for me on how to pay off my credit card debt. I had it paid off in about 6 months and was able to save another few thousand dollars on top of that with his plan. You know, I made a few sacrifices in my lifestyle, but I was still doing what I wanted to do.
So it's really nice that you had him there to help you to walk through this, to what encouraged you to really just understand how to break it down and tackle it piece by piece.
Yep, exactly. Again, there's a lot of advice out there, but you have to be able to personalize it and make sure that it actually fits your lifestyle. And having someone just sit down in front of me rather than just trying to figure it out from reading some articles online, it made all the world of a difference.
So what advice do you have for women who are going through the home buying process for the first time and they might not know where to start?
I tell everyone to start with their own financial profile. Understand how much money you're bringing in. I needed to understand my debt. I needed to understand how much I was spending on things. I remember at the time doing an analysis of my spending, and it was like, does your entire paycheck go to feeding yourself? That's what it felt like. Once you're more conscious of those things, you can make different choices. Also understanding what it's really going to cost to get into a home. I think that that's the part where a lot of people, certainly my peers, tend to get overwhelmed. Once you start adding up down payment, closing costs, maintenance, you know, all the things you need, savings. It just feels like you can never get enough, but it's totally doable. But you do have to at least cross that bridge of understanding how much you need. And then, of course, understanding how much you can afford once you really understand where you are today and where you want to be. And that's where you got to get with a home lending advisor early in the process to just sit down and say, what are the prices in my range? And that's not, you don't have to pull any credit or anything. You just need to really have a deep analysis of where you are financially. And then you can say, maybe it's going to be another year before I can purchase if you really have your eyes set on a certain neighborhood or a certain home, but you can get there.
Do you notice any differences between, you know, single people, particularly single women, when they're searching for a home, and a couple doing the same? You know, is there something as a single woman that you need to be either more aware of, or you just have to carry most of the burden yourself?
Absolutely. So this is a big decision regardless of how you do it and who you have signing the documents with you. It's a big decision. It's a big commitment. But when you are doing it on your own, you do need to make sure that you have extra savings, that you have that strong safety net, and all of those things build confidence. You can be more confident in the decision you're making when you know that you have $15,000 in your savings that you can pull on, you know, if a storm comes through and blows down your fence. If something goes wrong in your home, you know, you can handle that. So I just think when it comes to women, I always lead with education. I think that's how you empower yourself. And I'm not worried about women being able to make big decisions. I think we all do that every day. But this is one where if you have the savings, if you have knowledge of the process and of what you're getting into, then you'll be perfectly fine making this decision.
And it's so interesting to see how single women are buying homes. Recent statistics show that they make up close to 20% of new homeowners and that that's trending upward. And men, single men, make up under 10%, and that number is going down. So it's really interesting to see single women really becoming a bigger group of purchasers. Can you talk about what trends might be behind those and what groups of women you see within that segment that are really taking this on?
Absolutely. So women, we've all come a long way. We make up more than 50% of the workforce today. I think women are really focused on achieving their goals in their careers. But we also know that there's pay gaps. There's plenty of barriers that make it harder for women to do things on their own. But society's come around. Women are not waiting for husband and babies anymore to make this purchase if they want to. So I think you see this older cohort of women that often a divorce or separation of some kind and trying to maintain their lifestyle for their family. I think that's a big portion of the single women home buyers. And then you also have this younger millennial cohort that they're determined in their careers. They're determined on building wealth, and homeownership is a big part of that. I think the statistics around comparing men and women, that statistic to me is not about men. It's just an opportunity to compare where men are and how they're making those decisions. But I think it says a lot about women and where we are. And I think that that trend's going to continue to go up. And I'm so glad that society's come around to embracing women making these types of decisions for themselves.
I completely agree. You know, it's interesting to see that independence factor, whether that's for younger women starting out and buying a first home just for themselves in general, or as you mentioned, you know, women who might be divorced and have to reset up a household, which is a whole other independence, obviously, that one has to deal with just under different circumstances. But both areas are certainly important for women to be able to do on their own. And it's great to see that that is occurring. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the downsides, I think, on this is a single woman is more likely to be paying more for a home, about 2% more than a single man, and is also more likely to sell her home for less than a man. So how can we prevent this from happening? You know, how can women make sure they are getting the best price, whether they're buying or selling?
Yeah. Well, I think this study came out of Yale looking at what women are paying. And it's not necessarily that women are trying to set themselves up for this or that men are necessarily better at this. We know that discrimination exists. And this is one of those ways. It's the same kind of category as like the pay gap for women. But what we can do, what women can do, is again, making sure that they are empowered with information. They know what their credit scores are. You know, you need to know how much you can afford. You need to be pre-qualified so you have that piece of paper from the bank that says, this is how much you qualify for before you go out And that way you can be your own best advocate. It's the best advice I've ever received from another woman in my life, is just be your own best advocate in all areas of life. And home buying, this is a huge transaction. It's the biggest purchase most people will ever make in their life. And you need to make sure you know the information. You're not just relying on someone else to tell you what it is you can afford in your home with your expenses. And the other thing is, I think for the industry, representation matters. We need people on the other side of the desk in our companies that understand what it is that women are looking for, how they're living their lives today, and making sure that our advertising matches that, making sure that we're not just saying you need to be a family of four to make a purchase, or even just showing the images of big suburban homes. There are all different types of houses and structures that people buy. We need to make sure that people know that our company, that our industry embraces that, and that we are there for them as well.
And as people are shopping around for things like a mortgage, how do you advise them to do that? You know, how many offers or bids or whatever it is should you be getting? How many things should you be considering when it comes down to trying to get the best deal for yourself?
This is something that's very personal. Personally, when I was buying my home, I spoke to multiple different people. And one thing that was really important to me was making sure that I was working with an individual that was going to answer all my questions. Mm. I have a lot of them. And at the time, I was years into my career in banking. I could tell you anything about housing finance. I knew nothing about home buying. So I had a million questions, and I had set out thinking, I'm doing this for my whole generation. Like, no one is speaking to us directly, and I need to gather as much information as possible so I can tell everyone the secrets. I asked a lot of questions, and I found, you know, a few people that weren't that interested in answering my emails in the middle of the night. And then I find someone who does, someone who's ready to hold your hand and walk through that process with you. I think also people are very, you hear about rates all the time. And that seems to be like the big driving factor. Well, we've had historically low rates for years now. And when you're a first-time home buyer, you buy when you're ready to buy. So, you know, sometimes that's at the top of the market, sometimes at the bottom of the market. Rates are important because that really does determine, you know, what your payment's going to look like. But in this environment, you might find a lot of rates that are very close to each other. So what are some of those other things you can be looking for? You know, maybe if you're already a Chase customer, then, you know, there might be discounts available to you. If you are already a customer in another place, they might have something more to offer you there. And then also people need to make sure that they have more than just one person around them to helping them make these choices. You want to have a team that's going to help you reach your goals the best you can. One of those people is going to be your lending advisor. One of those people is going to be your realtor. Your realtor holds your hand through the whole process. But you also need to have that one person in your life that knows you personally, that knows what your goals are. This can be a daunting, you know, task for a lot of people, especially if you're going to a lot of open houses, you're not sure of what you're looking at anymore. You kind of forget what it is you wanted. That one person's going to remind you of that. So I actually had a close friend of mine who is very knowledgeable in this space, had just gone through the process herself. And she was the person that I went to for all of, like, what do you think about this? Or, you know, do you think I'm still going to be able to, you know, have my craft room if I get this smaller apartment? And she was really able to help me and hold my hand through the whole process.
That's great. I love the concept of the team, but also having that individual who really has your best interests at heart. They're not trying to sell you on anything. They're going to be there when you buy this thing, and they're going to hear the complaints if it's not right. So you want to get that person there. And something else you said that was interesting, you said it was good for you to talk to actual people, meaning you weren't just online looking things up and trying to get information by doing searches. You actually were talking to people through this process. So say more about that, because it's very easy to go online and find rates, find calculators, find a lot of things on websites. But that importance of having someone answer questions for you that are only yours and unique to you, you know, that seems to be a critical part of the process.
Absolutely. So what we know, there's tons of studies out there that show this. First-time homebuyers really do want to talk to somebody. This is a huge decision, and you don't know what all the questions are you're going to have. But what we also know about the information generation with millennials is that there is tons of information out there. The runway to getting to home ownership is just much longer now than it used to be. And a good chunk of that runway is just being online and Googling stuff and making sure that you have an understanding of what's out, but there's so much information out there. So what people want to do after they gather that information on their own is speak to a person. That could be over the phone, that could be on Zoom, that could be in person in a branch, but people do want to make sure that they have a human on the other side to really help them with this first transaction. Then maybe later on, you don't need that as much. But I think that that's one of the things that the industry does really well, is making sure that there is someone available to answer those first-time home buyer questions.
And then in regard to other things that might be helpful online, you know, some of those tools and apps, are there certain things that you found to be useful in gathering the information?
Absolutely. I love calculators. I want to play around with the numbers. I want to throw in different things. On Chase.com, we have tons of calculators to help people understand what it is that they're looking at. Calculators is how I learned what a refinance was. At the time, I wasn't even a homeowner, but you're getting to play around with all these numbers that really help you learn what it is you got. It might even help you understand how much does a fixer-upper really cost you. Mm. I mean, that's something that many first-time home buyers are buying an older home. That's often what we can afford. So you're going to have to make some repairs. What are the estimates on that? People really need to have this information going in, so that way then you can make the best decision. I love a DIY project, so that was great for me. But I think sometimes you got to call in a professional. You don't know how much that is. Well, there's a calculator to figure that out. So one of the first things people need to do is go to their lender and get pre-qualified. That tells you how much you can qualify for. That has nothing to do with what you feel personally you can afford. It's the same of anything you see in a calculator or you read tips online. You have to personalize this for yourself. So what you can qualify for, it just tells you what the ceiling is. It does not mean that's how much you can afford and that's the number you should go for. You should really try to figure out what it is you can afford, especially with your first home.
So let's try to bust some myths out there when it comes to home buying. And let's start with down payments. So question, is it true that you need to put down a 20% down payment on home?
This is the number one myth out there. This is not true. Currently, with the economic uncertainty in this current environment, there have been some temporary changes across the industry. But one of the changes at Chase in particular, what is exempt from some of these changes is our low down payment mortgages. So you can get into a home for as little as 3% down. On average, we were seeing people put around 8% has been the average for the last few years for home buyers in general. We don't have to go as low as 3%, but it just gives you more range to work with, again, on your personal budget. What can you afford? Those low down payment mortgages were designed with those millennial first-time home buyers in mind. It's just a different generation. We're in a different world. I'm so happy to see that the industry is understanding what people's lifestyles look like. It doesn't mean you're any less dedicated to your home. It just means that this is what I can afford to be able to safely get there. A lot of people have this barrier to entry when it comes to the down payment and closing costs. They can afford the payment. Many of us are paying that much in rent today, but it is those upfront costs that cause the most trouble. So in addition to not having to put that 20% down, there's also down payment assistance programs out there. Some run by your state, the city, nonprofits. Even Chase has a down payment assistance program. All of these things really help you chip away at what those initial costs will be.
Let's go to myth number two. And you actually talked about this a little bit. It's around affordability. And the question is the amount you get pre-qualified for by your lender a true indication of what you can afford to buy? And you did talk about this in terms of you might not want to or need to borrow as much, but I think it's important to stay on it. So talk about that pre-qualification and what that really means for you.
Sure. So this is when you're going to sit down with your home lending advisor. They're going to look at your debt to income ratio. This is DTI. Now, this is a main indicator that your lender uses to see what you can afford. It's looking at your current debt payments compared to how much money you bring in every month. And you know, you want that to be at a level that you feel like you have enough extra money. The bank has a cutoff of what they think is appropriate, but you need to really understand and be very conservative about what you can afford with your current expenses. We're going to look at, you know, generally what your credit look like. Have a good idea of what your credit score is. Chase Credit Journey is a great resource, free for everybody, and it allows you to really be able to play around with your credit score and see how it changes if you pay off some debt, if you buy a home. What's that going to look like for your credit score? That way you can walk into that conversation with your lender and say, I know exactly where I'm at. And there's no surprises. And then you walk out with a piece of paper that says, Kiasha Burns is qualified to purchase a home for $400,000 or whatever the number is. And then that's when the work starts on my part to really say, okay, how close to that number can I get? Where do I want to be? And, you know, really, what's that magic number monthly for how much money I'm going to spend? I still need to be able to save. It's so important to be able to make sure that you have that emergency fund, that housing fund for you to rely on.
So it's a good ballpark number, but in the end, you have to come to terms with what it is you want to spend yourself and how much you want to go up. So let's shift gears and talk about a critical issue, which is home ownership for Black Americans. JPMorgan Chase announced a new $30 billion commitment to help close the racial wealth gap, particularly for Black and Latinx communities. And a big part of this commitment is to support housing goals within these communities. And so of that number, there's $8 billion that's going to go toward an additional 40,000 loans for Black and Latinx households to buy homes, and another $4 billion to refinance loans to reduce mortgage payments for these communities. So I know you've been working on this initiative for quite some time, and I want you to talk to us about the genesis of this project. How did this all come together to make this a reality, you know, such a substantial commitment?
Personally, this is something I'm extremely passionate about. This is something that's years in the making. You know, some could say decades in the making. Our country went through a lot last summer. A lot of things were brought to the surface and really people could see some of these inequities in play. And homeownership is a big one. So that's how most Americans build wealth, is just through homeownership. And generations of homeownership bring more wealth to a family, and then they pass it along. When you don't have that ownership, or have maybe, you know, a few generations ago been held back from being allowed to have that kind of ownership, even looking at single women being able to buy homes many generations ago wasn't a thing. So now that people are getting to that place, we need to make sure as an industry that we are not a barrier to people being able to provide for their families. Homeownership is just one of the single biggest factors for being able to build wealth in America.
So to follow up on that, so talk about what homeownership and more of it can do for the Black and Latinx communities, particularly around the creation of wealth that they can pass along to generations.
We can look at the last housing crisis that a lot of people ended up going through foreclosure specifically in those high-risk neighborhoods, and that then wipes out wealth for an entire community. What this project is meant to do is bring that wealth back into those communities. We're talking about hardworking people who are just looking to overcome some of these initial barriers to being able to provide for their families. This is the goal for all American families. So anything we can do to provide education, provide programs that help you get to the table faster, being able to do more down payment assistance programs that help people chip away of how much money they need to bring to the table. Again, making sure that they can afford their payment, making sure that they're making the necessary lifestyle changes that all of us have had to do in order to get there, but just removing some of these initial barriers, then allow somebody to be able to purchase a home for their family in the community that they've been nurturing their whole lives, and then being able to pass that wealth on. This is how Americans start small businesses. People take the equity out of their homes to be able to send their kids to college. This also will then allows you maybe even to give some money to your children when they're ready to buy their first home. And this is how wealth is generated in this country. And that home equity is really is the center of it. Just think of all of the small businesses that then also come to those communities and then just bring up the property values, bring up the lifestyles, bring up the health of these communities. We know that children who are raised in a home that is owned by their families do better in school, have better health. Like, there's so many studies out there that really show the importance of home ownership, and so many families deserve it and have worked hard for it. And this is just yet another way that we're going to help them get there.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're very proud of this commitment. And as you say, it goes far beyond the home itself to really people's livelihoods and the viability of a community over time. So since some of this commitment is going toward attracting new homeowners and some of it is going toward refinancing, so existing homeowners, how do you think we'll go about reaching both of these populations and working with both these segments to make sure this becomes a reality?
Yeah, you mentioned something so important. We are also looking to reach those current homeowners. So there are people in certain communities who have rates from 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. And they're super high. And right now we're at a place where we have historically low rates, but there are closing costs in order to refinance. So yet again, there's another barrier for some of these families. What we're doing is offering a down payment assistance that will pay for those closing costs for people who want to get into our Dreammaker program, which is our low down payment affordable mortgage. This would allow some of these homeowners who might be paying, you know, they could be in the last 10 years of owning their home, but they have rates that are just so outdated. This allows them to also take advantage of those historically low rates and being able to keep them in their homes longer. Again, we're in very unsure economic times, and these communities are the hardest hit. And these are folks that also want to be able to provide for their families. And we don't want to see people lose their homes when they could be in a lower payment.
And so where could listeners find out more about any of these programs?
Absolutely. So there's so much more to come. This was just an initial announcement, especially on the Chase Home Lending side. But visit chase.com. You can talk to any of our home lending advisors in a branch over the phone, and they will help you understand what you currently qualify for, what is available in your area. Also on Chase.com, we have a list of all the states in the country and all the down payment assistance programs, so you can see what's available in your area.
What do you say to folks who they do want to buy, they might want to move, but they're just worried about doing the right thing right now?
I think that a lot of people get paralyzed with making big decisions. It's big. It's scary. But not making a decision is also a decision. So sometimes we just need to say, let's just think for the next 5 years. I can make a decision and stick with it for 5 years. That's fine. And then you can change it. It's not going to be the end of the world. People can say, where will I be happy today? And if that is not in your current situation, then start exploring other opportunities. You shouldn't just make assumptions like I made early in my process where I can't qualify for this. I can't afford it. It means I have to move out. You don't know if any of those things are true. So you just need to start exploring and understanding what it is that you need for your life. This is also where I think it is so important for us to have authentic conversations. I think I do this with my girlfriends just in my career. We all talk about how much money we make. We all talk about what it is we're looking to do in our futures. You need to have people around you that you trust. And then you feel a lot more confident having open conversations. And I just truly believe women that stick together and hold each other up is how women have gotten the type of progress that we've seen. And who knows what we can do going forward.
Well, Kiasha, that is great, inspiring, and optimistic. So I want to end on that note. And thank you so much for really helping us understand what goes into the decision about buying or refinancing homes and how more people can really do that to set themselves up for greater wealth in the future. So thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Thank you for listening to my conversation with Kiasha Burns, Vice President of Public Relations for Chase Home Lending. I loved her suggestion to practice your payment, set aside the money you'll need to buy a home, and save those payments for several months before you actually buy anything. It's great advice to get people comfortable and ready for such a major purchase. The mission of Women on the Move is to help women in their professional and personal lives. Our goal is to introduce you to people with great ideas, inspiring stories, and a passion to make a difference. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe so you won't miss any others. For JPMorgan Chase's Women on the Move, I'm Sam Saperstein. JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. is a member of the FDIC.